going to Chicago. I believe it was one of the first times. Well, it would have been the first time you recorded a full record outside of Canada. It was just singles otherwise. Yeah. You have this video. Once the album was released, what was the general feeling from the band about it? Were they satisfied with the recording? And what was it like after the release of the record?
I think all of our records, I don't think there were any of our records that we weren't satisfied with. Honestly, for me, I can only speak for myself. We have one 45 that I'm not so happy with. And it was the only one of our records that I think we did without like sort of a conscious sort of thought about making a record. It was the only record that, you know, it's only a single with three songs on it, but you know, we thought of every release as being important. So it was, friends were starting a label. They asked if we, you know, would put out a single with them. And so we looked around like, oh, what do we have that we haven't used yet? So a few things from that ended up being on that single, but everything else, I think we were like really, really happy with. I think that album, the Sport Fishing album, it excited us because of kind of like the bigger and sort of a little more aggressive sound on it, you know. And at that point, like, things were just continually growing for us in terms of audience as it was, you know, like a lot of different factors. It's really interesting. I was thinking recently about playing in Olympia, Washington, and I was trying to remember, like, the first time we played in Olympia, was that the first time that we went out west? And I don't think it was, but like the first time we played in the States was in Olympia, Washington. And it was, I think we had like two or three singles out. So each one of those things kind of meant something to us and was kind of significant in sort of growing the audience. And I know a lot of people kind of like attribute a lot of our success to Kids in the Hall, and that definitely exposed us to a lot of people, a lot of different people. But by the time we did Kids in the Hall, we were already like, you know, selling out clubs everywhere we were going and doing quite well. And so I think that album sort of like came out in the midst of Kids in the Hall. So that was the only one that came out while we were doing that show. So, you know, it had a little bit more attention paid to it than other records. You know, we were definitely really happy with it and had the very amusing thing. There was a magazine in Toronto and a weekly newspaper called Now Magazine in Toronto, that for a time they had a lot of power locally, and the writers had a lot of power and kind of, you know, wielded it. You would sell out a show if they covered your show, or if you were a brand new restaurant, they gave you a, you know, great review, your place would be packed the next day, you know. And the magazine it's gone now, but we had reviews like all over North America and Europe, and the only bad review we got for that album was from Now Magazine in Toronto, which was kind of amusing, very much kind of like, you know, a very sort of Toronto and a very Canadian feeling of like, oh, you guys are getting too big for your britches, you know, you're too successful, or, you know, you're doing too well, so, you know, we've got to knock you down a bit.
I don't recall if I asked you about this last time, but Shadowy Men won a Juno in 92.
What?
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I was like, oh no, did I get that wrong? I just wanted to ask you about that. What was that like, that experience winning a Juno then?
I only saw it on TV, so I could only tell you about that. We were nominated twice. The first year that we were nominated, we won. It was pretty surprising. Like, I really didn't anticipate that we would win. I did not think that we would win, and we were really like a wild card in the albums that were nominated, you know, because like everything else is like, you know, there's like a modern rock category and a country category and a folk category and then an instrumental category. So the instrumental category had like, you know, Lorena McKennitt and David Foster, you know, because of just like how embedded he is in the whole industry, we just assumed David Foster's gonna get this. And I was playing in another band at that time, and we were away on tour, so I didn't go to the award ceremony, but Brian didn't want to go. So Reed went with his wife and our friend Derek, who was our roadie. Mm-hmm. So the three of them were Shadowy Men. So Reed went up and accepted it. And so what I remember most about that was that Sylvia Tyson was one of the people who was giving the awards out. And it was just absolutely perfect because Reed is a huge Ian and Sylvia fan. And so Reed was like beside himself and like ran up on stage and kissed Sylvia Tyson. And she was kind of like, oh, she was sort of like taken aback because he was like so excited to meet her, you know, like up on stage. That was kind of the highlight. I went the second time. The three of us went the second time, and then we didn't win, and we were like, "Rough the Junos. Let's go out. Let's go for dinner." So we left the Junos and went out for dinner after that, and we were like, "Yeah, we're all into the awards as long as we're winning." It's like buying a lottery ticket. Like, you don't buy a lottery ticket to lose, you know. I don't want to go to the Junos and lose.
Oh, great story there, Adam. Did you want to continue? Was there something you wanted to touch on?
Well, I have a quick question. I'm not sure how much information you have on this, but it's relating to something that came out on the 2016 reissue of the record. There was a pair of tracks featuring vocals by Fred Schneider. I'm wondering if you can talk about how that connection was made, because that was when I first heard that. I was like, what an interesting combination. It makes sense to me, but I just had no idea how it happened.
Well, that also came about because of Steve Albini, because he recorded that album. So for our album, the Sport Fishing album, he was engineer. Like, but on the Fred album, he was producer. Like, Fred was relying on him for different aspects of the thing, you know, very much working with Steve. And one of the things that he left to Steve was to put the bands together. So Steve wanted to do it with three different bands, and so he asked us, Six Finger Satellite and another band that he basically put together centered around Rick Sims from the band The Digits. And so it was Steve that made that happen. But I think we were really like the only ones that worked with Fred. The others, like, they rehearsed with him and everything to learn the songs, but Fred came up to Toronto and we rehearsed in our garage, which was like great because it was just like this tiny little garage, not like a, you know, rehearsal studio or anything, and a microphone with the vocals going through a bass amp. And so he had sent us kind of like rough demos of a bunch of songs, and so we learned those, and then I wrote one song, and then another one we made up, like, just totally on the spot. And so, you know, we had probably a different working experience than the others did. And, you know, he was in Toronto for a few days. We went out and saw bands and went record shopping and stuff. And yeah, went down to New York and recorded the album there with Fred. And the third band that Steve put together with Rick Sims, they ended up being the live band for Fred's tour. But that record was a lot of fun to do. Working with Fred was fantastic. And yeah, definitely, you know, in a way, kind of like us working with Fred Schneider makes about as much sense as us working with Jad Fair, which I think is that it kind of does, you know. There are not too many singers that we've done things with. But yeah, we had definitely had a good experience with Fred.
And on the reissue, there's a couple songs. Well, yeah, the ones with Fred. There was another song, you know what, I can't remember if it was on this reissue or somewhere else. And I think Reed might be singing vocals on it. It was called like Foreign Alt or something.
Oh, Foreign Aft.
Oh, sorry, Aft, yeah.
That was done, we did that for a cartoon. That someone had contacted us about. He was making a pilot for a cartoon that he was trying to get produced, and so we did the music for the pilot. And there's a scene where the mouse who starred in it goes to a punk club. The band plays that song, and so Reed did the vocal on that.
I think that was on the Dim the Lights reissue, but I'm not sure specifically the
I'm not time. Sure either, because we just, like, when we were putting together those reissues, we just looked at everything that we had that had, most of it had come out in some way, but, you know, we had a few things like, you know, that thing that Reed sings on. We kind of combined it with another track. Mm-hmm. We sort of like mixed two together, sort of crossfaded it into another soundtrack thing that we had done that hadn't been released that we liked.
Thank you.
You're listening to Revolution Rock here on CJM 99.1 FM in the Windsor, Detroit area. I'm your host, Dave, joined with Adam, and we actually just came back there from playing the remainder of this full album that we're focusing on this week.
That's right. That is by Shadowy Men on a Shadowy Planet, Sport Fishin', The Lure of the Bait, The Luck of the Hook, and of course we've also been speaking with Don Pyle, as you've heard in our interview. We still have about 10 minutes or so of that interview left, which will be airing in the remainder of the show, but we figured, since we ended with the album proper, we might as well just get to talking about what songs we heard on that last leg of the record. We ended off with the untitled hidden track, which is just, like, this is something that's really unique about this record. There's, like, a lot of tape splicing happening here and just, like, samplings of, like, various sessions with live recordings. It is a completely off-the-wall hidden track with a fun little nugget to end off the album on.
Yeah, and so yeah, it's actually just shaking all over for like a minute.
And then a bunch of audience applause. It's funny. That actually is the hidden track that ends the album. The final official track, though, is Baby Wet Itself.
Before that, we heard the song Memories of Gay Paris, What I Like About Greece, We'll Be Right Back, Off Our Back, Conrad Black, and They Don't Call Them Chihuahuas Anymore. A little side note I wanted to add about one of the songs. There is a Shadowy Men website that's devoted, like, it's very old school. I'm pretty sure it came into existence during the GeoCity days.
Ooh, that's ancient.
And
okay.
It's on Brainiac Web or something. I can't remember the full title, but it's a semi-official site. It just has all the information if you're looking for something that you can't find through your normal channels. And there's a brief interview with Reed Diamond from many years ago, and we talked with Don about the titles, and he says it was a lot of inside jokes and conversations they had, and that's kind of how the titles generated, and there were so many that he doesn't really remember them all. But apparently when they came up with the song What I Like About Greece, Reed Diamond said that, no, it was What I Like About Greece, the place, Greece, but they misinterpreted it as What I Like About Greece, you know, Greece, the gooey stuff.
Oh, you see, I always thought it was about the musical Grease.
It could also be about that. So we don't really know. I guess it kind of has 3 degrees of Grease separation on that track.
That's a lot of GC on that.
And there's a little side anecdote about that track that I found out shortly after the interview when I was checking out that website that I failed to give the complete address for. We will get it in a moment.
We will. Speaking of websites, please check out cjam.ca for information on the station that hosts us, and also go to revrock.blogspot.com for info on the show, info on bands we love and play, as well as the full interview with Don Pyle. Speaking of which, coming up next after a short commercial break, we're actually going to be hearing from Don Pyle and wrapping up that interview. We have about 10 minutes with that interview left. And then, ending off the show, a plethora of other great Shadowy Men on a Shadowy Planet songs to round off this episode celebrating 30 years of Sport Fishin'. Dave, with that said, let's get to this friendly station ID reminding you where you're tuned into here on 99.1 FM. I was just going to ask about what happened after Shadowy Men disbanded, because I know it would have been about 95, 96.
Yep.
You went on to form a Phonocomb and kind of went from there, but was it a mutually agreed upon decision? Was there any tension from that disbandment? Like, what was it like at that point?
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely tension because we had planned on taking a year off for quite a long time. And, you know, I think we had kind of planned it for like 4 years. Because, you know, we all had other things that we wanted to do, and the band was just like so full on, you know, like, you know, we'd go from working on a movie or TV show to touring to recording, and it was very much like, you know, a full-time job, but like, you know, full-time plus, because, you know, you're doing it all week and every weekend, and it was kind of like, you know, our life. So we planned this year off. Right at the beginning of that year off, Reed was diagnosed with cancer. So he was it was pretty intense. Like, you know, his treatment for that was really invasive, and he was in really poor health. So during this year off, like, you know, where we all intended to kind of like go and do different things, Brian started another band, the Heat Seekers, and Reed and I was already like, you know, doing another thing as well that kind of overlapped with Shadowy Men. But so Reed and I just still kept getting together, you know, because we're friends and, you know, concerned about him. And him and I would get together regularly and just write songs and play together. And then we wrote all these songs that ended up being the first Phonocome album. In addition to that, we wrote an album with Jad Fair from the group Half Japanese. And that was like right at the end of like before our year off. And then when it came, so that was going to kind of like intrude onto the time that we had said we were going to take off. And so after we'd, you know, written and rehearsed this whole album, then Brian didn't want to do it, didn't want to record the album. So we asked Dallas Good, who people know from mostly from his band, the Sadies. So we asked Dallas if he would play guitar on it. And so we did the Jad Fair album with Dallas playing on it. And then all these songs that Reed and I had written, you know, we started inviting Dallas to rehearsal and playing. And then the three of us were just like, this is great. Like, you know, it kind of like felt like, in a way, it felt like Shadowy Men had sort of like refined ourselves to a point where it was like a point. And it's like, you know, it's, we've reached this point here where there's not a lot of wiggle room here, you know? So we were a very sort of defined thing. And so it was exciting for Reed and I to be playing with Dallas and to be, for everything to be open-ended. Like, you know, if you want to use a synthesizer or a drum machine, you know, everything's on the table. It's like, and, you know, we're being very supportive of each other and encouraging of our just like exploring creativity. So it felt kind of like different. I think kind of Brian was sort of like, I don't know, I think he was sort of bored at the end of the band and just like wanted to do his own thing. You know, he was writing songs that he wasn't bringing to the band. But, you know, when you hear his band, the Atomic Seven or Heat Seekers or Phonocome, you can hear very much, like, I think both those bands, you can really hear kind of like who did what in Shadowy Men, you know, because Brian's stuff is very guitar centered. It's kind of like the bass and the drums are very like support instruments in his stuff. Reed and I, you know, they're kind of a little sort of wilder and more ensemble songs. So it was tough to let go of this thing that was very much a part of our life and kind of like our growing up and our friendship, because we were, you know, in Crash Girls 5 together and then Shadowy Men together. But it just like felt like the right thing to do. And as scary as it was to let go of it, you know, we also had this great thing going on for us, like, you know, Phonocome. Can't speak for Brian, but yeah, so we did the tour with Jad, we did the album with Jad, and then immediately after did the Phonocome album, which Steve Albini also recorded. He came up to Toronto and recorded that with us. So it's funny, I like the sound of the Phonocome album that Steve did more than I like the Chicago Recording Company. I loved the sound of Sport Fishing at the time, but over time, I think from like going into studios to do like remastering or compiling like for the box set and the reissues, that, you know, there were some things that I was hearing on it that I was like, this isn't as big sounding. It has like, it has a veneer of sounding sort of big, but it doesn't really sound as big as what I kind of like first felt or what I felt for many years. So I was kind of hearing it with fresh ears, and I like the kind of like the Phonocome album that's a little more sort of toned down and sort of sounds like it's in a little more of a smaller space than that album is. Yeah, so we all continued kind of doing our own thing. You know, Brian had Heat Seekers going for a while, maybe a year, and then he disbanded that band and then started Atomic Seven, which he did off and on for like, oh God, like, you know, 15 years or so. Mm-hmm. And he's recently started a new band called Her Ghost that are really good and basically kind of like Atomic Seven, you know, very much like Brian's songs centered around Brian, but they're quite excellent. You know, there was tensions and then, you know, Reed died, and then that kind of brought Brian and I closer together and sort of brought Brian sort of like back in. You know, he has a good relationship with Reed's wife as well. But I think kind of like, I don't know, that sort of like bit of harsh reality made our personal relationship better, which, you know, unfortunately Reed wasn't here to be part of that. So when we started playing as Shadowy Men again with Dallas, it was like from a very different place and with sort of different expectations. And it was just like nothing but great, you know, like there was no kind of like, this is our job. So, you know, no kind of conflict about, you know, do we go on this tour?